everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have a great program for you today. Do you want a deeper connection with others, to grow in empathy and be there for the people around you? Well, my guest today is David Richman. He is an author, public speaker, philanthropist, and endurance athlete whose mission is to form more meaningful human connections through storytelling. In his new book called Cycle of Lives, David shares the interconnected stories of 15 people overcoming trauma and delves deeply into their emotional journeys with cancer. He explores issues far exceeding everyday survival. These stories are interwoven amongst his own solo 5,000-mile bike ride to go meet the book participants. For more information about David or his new book, again called Cycle of Lives, please go to david-richman.com or cycleoflives.org. So welcome to the program, David. So great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Terry, and thank you for that intro. It's very, very nice.
Absolutely. And I really was impressed with your book and just your whole mission and journey. But let's start off, David, with you and your personal journey. You write about the fact that you are a former sedentary, overweight smoker, and now you're an endurance athlete. So share with us, how did that transition occur?
That's funny because it seems like a different person, right? It was about 20 years ago that I just had a number of things come together that just made me make this decision to say, okay, I got to get on a new path. But here I am 20 years later, just 2 days ago, doing another Ironman.
Wow.
And it's kind of fun because, you know, it wasn't just a want to check it off on a bucket list or something. It just was a lifestyle change. And that was brought on by a very kind of disastrous relationship. I had to get me and my kids out of a bad situation, and I did. They were very young, 4-year-old twins. Mm-hmm. And I had stresses at work and outside of work, some of them self-created, some of them not. And then I got a call kind of all at the same time when I was coming to a realization that I needed to make a change in my life. I got a call from my sister, who said, "Hey, bro, I've been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer." Mm. And I guess all of those things just came together. And I just, not even figuratively, Dr. Terry, literally, I stood in front of a mirror and said, "Okay, you and your kids are safe. You just heard this news from your sister. You got your whole like life all twisted up. What do you want to be? Where do you want to go? Who do you want to be? You know, what are you going to do with yourself?" And that was kind of like the starting point.
Thank you for sharing that story, David. Just an amazing transition, but a reaction and coping to a lot of challenges in your life. And then did that lead to writing your books as well?
Yeah, I'd always been a writer, but I had always, I'd never been an author, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's one thing to write for yourself, and I think it's wonderful when people keep journals and they do the, you know, art or writing or some other creative endeavor for themselves. But I also think that it's such a shame when you see somebody that has something to say or something to show you that isn't out making the most of it. And I didn't want to be that guy. I felt like if I could tell really good stories, then why don't I focus on that? And everybody has things to learn, but I've also found everybody has things to teach. And I thought by telling the stories, both of my own and of other people, that they could teach people these wonderful stories could teach people. And certainly that was the goal in my second book, the one that just came out that you mentioned, the Cycle of Lives book. was for that reason. So yeah, it definitely empowered me to say, okay, stop wanting to be a writer and just write.
Very good. And I know you also talked, David, that your sister's passing and your sister's journey with cancer also motivated you to write Cycle of Lives. And I think that's such a wonderful way to honor her memory. Now, why did you decide to present 15 different stories in your book, Cycle of Lives? And where did you find or learn about these 15 people?
Well, I'm going to say that's a great question for your listeners, for you. I mean, you're an expert in this. You're an expert in communication. And what happened was, Dr. Terry, is I was doing some events in June's honor and then in her memory. And I noticed that there was one recurring theme amongst people who were going through cancer, their survivors, their loved ones, their caregivers, doctors, nurses, and more. And that recurring theme was that they were able to deal with the tasks around the cancer. Where do I get my PET scan? How am I going to get my kids watched when I'm getting chemo? How can I eat healthier? That type of stuff. But when it came to discussing the emotional side of that trauma, people just weren't equipped. They just weren't equipped to do it. And it often led to self-isolation or abandonment, people not wanting to burden others, people feeling guilt. You know, you don't want to have sympathy. I mean, there's just a million reasons why that emotional side of it, the emotional facet, is often left out of the dealing with it mentality. Mm-hmm. That just gets pushed off to the side. And that happens in love and a ton of other areas as well sometimes. So I said, Dr. Terry, how could I give a 360 view of that experience so that we could relate as people to somebody's story? I don't know if I could get everybody to relate to one story, but certainly everybody could relate to one of these 15 stories. So I got young, old, fear of cancer, to had lived with cancer for 35 years, a 40-year practicing oncologist, a brand new pediatric oncology nurse, people that lost loved ones, people that saw other, you know, loved ones go through things. And I wanted to give a 360 view of this emotional reaction to what they were going through or what they had seen, so that I could give this kind of complete view of the emotional side of it, and then tell it in what I think are inspiring and evocative stories.
Mm-hmm. And now I know all the stories are unique. Every individual is unique and special. But mm-hmm. did you discover any themes, facets that were consistent among the participants? I know you said that one of the themes was dealing with the tasks.
Yeah.
But are there other kinds of themes that you can share among the stories?
Yeah, sure. So let me frame it real quickly, though. Mm-hmm. I didn't talk really about the cancer. What I talked about was their lives and the traumas that they experienced before cancer came into their life. And those traumas were things that we all have to deal with. Abuse, abandonment, suicide, you know, a drug addiction, making bad choices, whatever. So that could provide the framework so that we could understand who the person was. And then when they encountered cancer, it was point A. Point B is today. And how are they able to or unable to navigate the emotional side of it? So one thing I found, so I wanted to frame that because I think it's important to say that we were only talking about the emotional side of it in relation to them as real people that we could identify with, right? Mm-hmm. And so every single person, even though their stories were unbelievably inspiring and unique and moving and tragic and hopeful and just heart-wrenching and beautiful, each person thought that their story wasn't very interesting, which was amazing. So, because people are just living their lives, right? They don't think that what they're doing is amazing. They're just trying to get from day to day. So that was one that was that. Number two, with these 15 that was common was that they were all willing and able to talk. Even if I was the first person they had ever talked to about it, they were willing to talk. So what I think is a commonality, Dr. Terry, is when you find people who have been through something transformative, or many transformative events throughout their lives, and you catch them at a time when they're willing to navigate all of the, you know, stuff behind that, in order to have their story told in an authentic, heart-centered, you know, grounded, real, raw way, the connection that you can make with people and the insight that they can give you into what, you know, how these traumas have affected them and what we can learn from them, it's just magical. And so the thing that I learned is that everybody is super interesting if you catch them at the right time and allow them a safe place to tell you, you know, their deepest, darkest truths. So that was pretty neat. I guess lastly, the thing that was kind of common, not always common, but pretty much common with the majority of the people was this idea of abandonment or self-isolation because they just didn't know how to talk to people or other people didn't know how to talk to them. And and that's what I wanted to try to solve for.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that a little bit, David. I mean, you said that these participants were willing to talk because of the timing. And I think you're right. But if you also look at it psychologically, you were engaged in an interaction, right, with them and you. So it had to be partly you as well, from my standpoint, as well as the questions that you might have been asking. So can we explore for just a few minutes, like what kinds of questions did you ask? And were there ways that you as the interviewer, you as David, got people to open up to you in such a deep and personal way?
Yeah, it's a great question. I really appreciate you asking it because it's something that I find a lot of wonder in. And, you know, it's kind of magical because I wasn't able to connect with everybody. And clearly, the stories didn't make it into the book. And some people weren't able to, even if we did have a connection, go to the depths that we needed to go in order to tell a real, raw, authentic, you know, story. And I think, you know, this as a writer, your readers know when you're asking them to come to a conclusion, right? They just know it. And if it doesn't ring true, it just ruins it. And so, so that's the background of it is that if they couldn't talk or I couldn't provide the connection, then that was that. But I kind of set the stage, Dr. Terry, by asking them. Let me tell you a quick story about this oncologist.
Yes.
I caught her at a time. She had been a 40-year surgeon oncologist, breast cancer, male and female breast cancer at NYU. And phenomenal story and just a wonderful, wonderful woman, just amazing. But had grown up at a time when women weren't supposed to be doctors, let alone surgeons, let alone oncologists. And I mean, even one time she tried to get some patients from another doctor and one of the doctors said, "How am I going to refer my patients to you? You're a woman doctor with curly hair. They're not going to respect you." And I mean, that's the kind of environment that she grew up
in. Right.
When I talked to her the first time on the phone, I said, "Dr. Myers, I said, could I ask you questions that nobody else has asked you?" And she goes, "Yeah, sure." And I said, no. I mean, I want to talk to you about things you don't even talk to your husband about." She goes, "Yeah, we don't really talk about this emotional side of what I've been through." And I go, "Really?" She goes, "No." I go, "What about your peers?" And she goes, "Are you kidding me? I'm a woman doctor. I'm not going to talk about my emotions at work." Mm-hmm. And I said, "What about your friends?" And she goes, "Oh my God, they all do crazy stuff too. And we just kind of go to parks and go on walks and go to museums. We don't really talk about our stuff." And I go, "Well, who have you talked to?" And she goes, "Well, besides you, nobody. Let's see what we find out." Wow. And so it was amazing. And her story was really cool. And I won't, you know, get too deep into it, but it just talked about the arc of her emotions when she started out as a young 20s surgeon, now in her 60s as a surgeon and oncologist, what, you know, how life had changed and her, how the emotions of what she was going through and watching her patients go through had grown and changed and adapted to make her become more and more desperate for her patients to take her advice and her care, because she now had that perspective of somebody who had lived this beautiful, wonderful, you know, life, And it was a wonderful story, but it was all wrapped around kind of the tragedy of the fact that her father abandoned the family when she was a little girl, never to be heard from again. And wow. And so that made that what I wanted to tell with that story was, how can we be a better patient for our doctors? Because what they go through, we have no idea as well. And so anyway, that's an example. I just caught her at the right time. We were able to go super deep. We talked about, oh my gosh, everything. And I think just by giving people a safe space, letting them know what my goal was in talking to them, that I wasn't looking to uncover them. I was looking to uncover them to show people how to learn from what they've been through.
Mm-hmm. And given what you've done, you know, interviewed all these 15 different people, and that was such a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing the oncologist story. Mm-hmm. But what can listeners learn then from you today about how to start those hard conversations with people in their lives who are experiencing obstacles, cancer, a journey on an illness? Are there things that you can share that they can take away from today to then allow those people to start those hard conversations?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you deal with relationships and people talking all the time and or not talking, and you know, communication is the key to a lot of your work, right? So, right. I mean, it's a very important thing. And I think in this area, when people are going through trauma, I think one of the most important things to do is to try to figure out a way to understand, if you ask a closed-ended question, that there's so much more behind their answer that it just, you can't have any insight as to what they're going through. When you ask somebody, is there anything I can do for you? And they say no, it doesn't mean, is there anything I can do for you? No, I'm fine, right? It means a million different things. It could mean, no, I don't want to burn you. No, I don't want to disclose what I'm going through. No, I don't want to have you look at me all, you know, sympathetic eyes. It could be no, because if I ask you for help, you're going to abandon me. It could be no, because if I ask you for help, you're not going to actually listen to me and give me what I need, right? There's a million reasons why that simple little, hey, do you need anything? No, I'm okay, is not that. I think if we can, if we really are interested, and I think most of us are, in forming more authentic, deeper connections with the people that are in our lives, then we have to start by asking open-ended questions, not closed-ended questions. So in other words, not, you know, are you feeling okay? It's like, can you talk to me about how you're feeling today? Or, mm-hmm. you know, can you tell me how you're feeling today compared to yesterday? Or, oh my gosh, I wanted to talk to you about this and I didn't know how to approach it. How is the best way to talk to you about this? Right? Mm. Open-ended questions that might give us a little bit of insight, because there's so much behind. We're all just little kids, right? We're all just little kids in bigger bodies, but we just want to know that we're safe to be able to be heard and to say what we want, and to have the person that we're saying it to, it, especially if it's personal, really care to hear the truthful answer, and then do or not do something that would be what we would want in return. And I think we start that by having, you know, very authentic, open-ended questions as a start. Mm,
I like that advice, David, because I don't think we spend enough time in communication and interactions with others asking those open-ended questions and then listening and responding to answers. I mean, many of us have all these questions in the back of our head, and we're not even listening to the answers that people are giving us. We're just ticking through the questions. So not only do they need to be open-ended, but I would also add, David, that we need to listen and listen well. Mm-hmm. Show that person we are listening, even just nodding our head or looking at somebody in their eyes, right into their eyes, and asking another question given what they said is so very important. So thank you for that advice. And I think your stories and your book illustrate how important that is. Now, share with us, David, as well, what are some of the things you learned on the 5,000-mile bike ride? Why did you do it? And specifically, how does endurance athletics play such a big role in your book, Cycle of Lives?
That's so great. I'm just laughing because what can I tell you about biking 5,000 miles? Well, when you try to do it in 45 days, it hurts.
Oh, yes. I can feel it as you're talking.
It hurts. That's 120 miles a day. So, it was a solo ride. I mean, I had support, but it was a solo ride. So I'm out there by myself every day for, 8, 10, 12, 14, even 17 hours one day of biking. It was just insane. But so I learned a lot. I mean, and I know we only have, a limited amount of time, but I definitely learned what you just got done talking about, which is we just don't know what people have gone through. And so to really listen, even if just for a moment, the things you can find out about people are absolutely fascinating. I learned about my own kind of emotional journey. I had pretty much come to terms with my sister's death, and it was pretty tragic. Young kids and wonderful marriage and great family and friends and but what I hadn't grieved was the fact that I lost the only person that knew me as a kid, and knew what we went through, right, as kids. And so I kind of had to grieve that loss for myself, not just the fact that she died. I had to grieve the fact that she kind of left me, and so that was something I came to terms with. I also learned that people are unbelievably nice. I mean, I probably was way guilty, like most of us are, in coming to quick conclusions about what people are going through or what their intentions are when we don't really know. And when you're doing something like a cross country solo bike ride for a charitable cause, with a meaning behind it, man, everybody wants a piece of it just to say thank you, or I appreciate what you're doing, or how can I help? It was really wonderful. I mean, it was a wonderful experience.
That is so great. Now, and just explain, why did you do it from the beginning? Was it to help you grieve, or was it to then go visit the participants in the book?
It was to go visit, and it kind of came up as kind of a gimmicky thing. I mean, I know that sounds still silly, but it was because I
No.
thought to myself, look, if we're only connected by two things as human beings, right? We're connected by emotion and we're connected by story. That's it. We could get into that at another time, but I think that's a pretty accurate statement. So if I'm doing these 360 stories of covering the wide range of human emotions, and I want to connect people through these stories, what better way to connect them than to ride my bike? Because I had only talked to the people on the phone for a couple of years and never really met most of them in person. And so I said, why don't I just connect the stories by riding my bike in a zigzaggy manner, down and around and then up the country so that I could meet them for the first time, and that would connect these stories together. So I'd be the thread that binds the stories together. And
Wow,
so I
that's
said, all right, yeah.
wonderful. And I
I
have to
know,
ask,
right?
are you still in contact with the book participants, by the way?
It's odd. Every once in a while, I get asked that question, or I think about it, and I'll tell you, three or four of the participants have become very, very close friends, and we're in a very regular contact. Some we're in contact, but we're not really close at all. And then a few, I think that this was a really good exercise for them and an important part of their life and at the right time, and then they moved on, and I'm wonderfully great with that, because we could both be there for each other at that time. But yeah, a couple of them have turned into great friends, and they've had just it's been 5 years now since I did the bike ride. It's only been a year since the book's come out, but some time has gone by, and some people have gone through just amazing transformation and amazing and sometimes very difficult circumstances. So
Right.
I'm glad that some of them are friends. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Now we only have 1 minute left, David. If there's one message that you want people to take away from today's program, what might that be?
Oh, the one message. Well, in context of all the things we've been talking about, Dr. Terry, I think it would be this, and that is that don't take what I'm going to say as a little trite message of we don't know what people have gone through or are going through. I mean, take it like 100 levels deeper than that. Like, we really don't know what they've gone through on an emotional level. We have no idea. And I think if your listeners are like me and like you, and you want to know what's behind that, you want to really form these deep, meaningful connections with people, just keep that at the forefront of your mind that you don't know, and don't come with conclusions or assumptions about what they need or don't need. Just really give them a safe space to talk, really, like you said, active listen, and, you know, really understand that what's going on today is a reflection of the emotional things they've gone through in the past. And most of the time they're going to need you, but they want you there in an authentic way.
Thank you for that advice and that message, David. Thank you so much also for joining me today. What a pleasure talking to you. And thank you for all the good work you're doing.
You're welcome. And thank you, Dr. Terry. One last thing I forgot to mention, that the book participants picked a cancer-focused charity, and 100% of the proceeds from the book are going to support those charities. So not only can your listeners learn from these stories, but they'll be doing a little bit of good as well.
Thank you for sharing that. 100% of the 100%. Profits. Excellent.
I'm not taking a penny.
Excellent. And again, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about David Richman or his new book called Changing Lives, please go to david-richman.com or cycleoflives.org. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, theLoveDoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.